There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
It is 1770. We're with Captain Cook off the coast of what will become Australia. The captain records in his log, he sees a smoking cape. This moment in history is a way of talking about a phenomenon that is worldwide and that challenges civilization. In the Northern Hemisphere, Greece, Spain, Italy, in the Southern Hemisphere, especially Australia, but Argentina and Chile, wildfires, they're called in California, bushfires, they're called in Australia. A new book that is an old book, a book that is necessary now and was necessary when it was written a dozen years ago, A Future in Flames. Daniel Claude is the author. Daniel is very generous to come back after I interviewed her about her wonderful new book, Koalas. And in the course of that conversation, we talked about the horror of a wildfire to a koala, because koalas cling to their source of energy, which is a eucalyptus tree. And eucalyptus in a fire are very dangerous. Danielle, I congratulate you for having anticipated the fate of the planet a dozen years ago, because we're now in a situation where wildfires, we're told, are going to become routine, not rare. And perhaps every year there'll be damage to the environment, to the economy, and of course to people and wildlife. I begin with the Captain Cook reference because we need to understand that wildfires are not, or bushfires, are not a product of civilization. They were always there. What did Captain Cook see? What was the cape he was watching? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me back. The early European explorers traveling around the coast of Australia frequently reported seeing fires. It was an important thing they were looking for because it indicated whether there were people ashore. They thought that was a good indicator of campfires and those sorts of things. But there were a lot of fires observed along the coast. So this was a very frequent occurrence, and some of them were clearly a bit bigger than a campfire.
And Captain Cook saw a bushfire, is that what he's recording? And it would have been vast for him to see it at sea. I believe James Banks saw it. Tasman of Tasmania saw in 1802. He also saw a fire. And when they reported this back to Europe, did Europe make sense of it? Did it have any experience at the time of the fires at the scale we're talking about?
No, I don't think they really interpreted it that way. In my reading of the exploration journals from a wide range of explorers, they tend to be just looking at whether this indicates whether they look like their fires out of control or whether they look like they're deliberately lit. So they're really interested in whether there are people there. So they tend to report everything as a possible campfire. But there are certainly, once they went ashore, quite a few of them observed really intense fires that clearly were out of control. So ones that had, burnt all the vegetation, not just little domestic fires. But I think that's a really important thing to consider in when we think about fires, is the different ways they occurred naturally and also the different ways people have used them through our very long history. Humans have a very long history of using fire. So it goes right back into our prehistory. So we have a long history of using fire, and we use it in lots of different ways.
We go to the first fleet. This is the arrival of Europeans in Australia to begin the colony, the Botany Bay colony, and then to expand into the arable land. They start, as I understand, in the southeast of the country, which is now called New South Wales. The early settlers, the early farmers, they used fire, but at the same time, they watched how the indigenous people, the Aborigines, used fire. Well, it's a tool. How did how was that tool used first by the Aborigines and then by the colonists?
Yeah, so I think that's something we often underestimate in Australia, and this is probably common elsewhere. We underestimate how much we have learnt from Indigenous people, although we don't always apply those lessons well. And it's pretty clear that Indigenous people used fire in a diversity of ways prior to, well, for, throughout their long history. They use it for hunting. They use it to get game to come out of the thick forests. They use it to clear passage for movement. They use it for signalling and for messaging neighbouring communities. And of course, they use it for defence and for warfare. And they use it for campfires, of course, as well. And I think that this issue of using it to manage the land is a really important one that we're only just coming back to terms with, understanding how they used it to stimulate new growth. So they use it selectively in some areas and not in others, so that the next year when they come back, they've got a whole heap of new shoots and edible components, and also to promote grass for grazing animals so that they've got better prey. So we call this fire stick farming, as a recognition of that land management system that has been perfected over more than 60,000 years in Australia, and it's really integral to the Australian ecology. And when Europeans arrived, they had no idea about any of this. All they saw was that you could use fire to clear land, and they did so pretty indiscriminately to clear the forests.
Yeah, before we go to the pyromaniac settlers, I believe is one term, before we go to that, did the Indigenous people, the Aborigines, did they use fire to clear a highway, travel between places?
It depends really on the area that people live in. We have to remember Australia is a very big continent. It has very diverse range of different ecologies. So some areas are grassland, some areas are dense forest. It seems that they probably did use fire in some of the dense forests in the south, in Tasmania and in Victoria, to help clear access, not just for themselves, but also for grazing animals and things. So they benefit from this as well. So it's not so much a highway, but certainly to clear the undergrowth. And to stop it, it stops it from getting so thick. So early explorers often describe these forests as being park-like. You know, Dumont Durville described the forest as being as beautiful as a park in Paris. And after Europeans had been here for a while, those parklands weren't there anymore. So they were clearly part of, a process of land management that we're only just beginning to recognize and appreciate.
Yes, it turns out we're grass eaters just like the sheep, and grass is something that burns in Australia and it regenerates very quickly. And that, so the economy prospers on the basis of being able to clear land and regenerate it for your sheep herd. Of course, the fires get out of control. Is there a sense from the literature in the 19th century, this is the 1850s and afterwards, that they feared fire, they feared the fires that we have today, or were they relaxed about it because there were so few of them? What was the attitude?
Yeah, I think in the early days, when there was relatively few, the population was low, and European population was pretty scattered. A lot of the people who were using fire were out in the rural areas in very isolated areas, and it was certainly a threat. Uncontrolled fires are a threat, but at the same time, burning through a big patch of bush where they didn't think anybody lived, even though that is where Indigenous people lived, they didn't see that as being a problem. So I guess they were a little bit more lackadaisical about the use of fire. And that became an increasing problem as the numbers of people in those high fire-prone areas increased. And certainly pretty early on, by about 1851, they started to realize they had a real problem on their hands.
Yes, I learned that every day of the week has been named black at some point. There's Black Thursday, Black Tuesday, Black Monday.
Black, yeah. Black, or red.
Yes, Black Thursday, 1851. 5 February, 1851. And it's important now to remember, upside down world. January and February are summertime. Right now it's springtime in Australia. January 51, 5 February 1851, a hot northerly blows in, 47 degrees centigrade. My goodness. I think that's like 120 or more Fahrenheit. And it drives It drives through and blows right through. So we need now to turn about what to turn to what burns, the science of wildfires or bushfires, as they're called in Australia. The book is A Future in Flames, highly recommended, especially to California and the west of the United States, to understand this is a global phenomenon that is going to get routine over these next decades. A Future in Flames, Daniel Claude is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John.
What if every student had a tutor and personalized learning was available to everyone? What if every family had a financial guide and their investments made for an optimistic future? What if every doctor could diagnose you in seconds and healthcare visits felt more personal? What if your business never slept and every customer's shopping experience felt like it was designed especially for them? It can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.